I have wrestled with an alligator. I done tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning, throw thunder in jail. That's bad. Only last week, I murdered a rock, injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
Man, dude.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to another episode of the Type 1 Radio Lounge. And a message to anyone who is famous in the 70s, you should be pretty fucking nervous by now because they're dropping like flies, aren't they?
Do you think that Cliff's in some sort of rejuvenation chamber in Barbados?
If he isn't already sort of a cyborg, yeah, he probably is. I don't know. It just seems to be the ones who were. I mean, Cliff was kind of big in the 60s as well, wasn't he? But so was Ali, I suppose, wasn't he? He won his Olympic medal in the 60s.
Yeah.
And duly threw it in the river, sort of thing. Yeah, it was quite funny. I was listening to tributes on the radio today, and there was a. I can't remember the guy's name, but it was a white sports guy in the States, and he was just basically saying, you know, when Ali sort of refused to go to Vietnam. And he said, you know, why? I'm not even loved in my own country, so why do I want to go and kill people in other country who have the same colour skin as me? I'm not going to go. And everyone thought, you know, they believed the hype of them all saying, you know, he's just a coward and he's not going to do it sort of thing. But right. A lot of people actually took notice of what he was doing and sort of that's, you know, he was pretty instrumental in getting, you know, starting people asking questions about why are we over in a country that we've got no interest in. Fighting people we don't even know or have any kind of beef with, so he was a good man,
maverick.
Ali.
He was quite maverick in his actions, wasn't he?
Completely. his interviews with Howard Cosell are legendary, you know? I mean, it's like, we never had a sports figure like that, you know? All the personality and the bombast and the transformation of name and the, you know, I mean, he took things in directions no one had done before, you know.
Absolutely.
He was the greatest. He definitely made a big impact on American culture.
Well, he transcended sport, transcended everything in the sport. You know, the man came out in it, and you know what, a smart guy. And let's not forget any boxing fans out there. He was a fabulous boxer as well. I mean, I can remember being like 9 years old and knowing about him and loving him. Being absolutely
watching him on Wild World of Sports on Saturdays, you know.
I mean, Nick and I were talking earlier, and we were looking. We'll get some quotes and what have you, something like Nick played at the beginning of the show. And my favourite one was. His advice to someone was never look down on people who look up to you. And I just thought, what a fucking brilliant thing to say. You know, how humble. Yep. And I often think, you know, that these mannerisms and the way he went around and the fact that he went to Islam, I mean, he should have gone to Hinduism, shouldn't he? Or thing, because he was pretty enlightened, I reckon.
Well, there are enlightened people within Islam. Their system, they are referred to as Sufis. The writer that many people just adore, everything he ever wrote, a guy named Rumi, was a Sufi. And it turns out that his guru or imam, depending which direction you're approaching someone of that caliber, Shams of Tabriz came across Rumi while he was, you know, growing into an imam role and thought he knew a great deal. And Shams came and took the Quran out of his hands, walked over and threw it in the water, said, "You don't know anything." And of course, you know, Rumi and his students kind of freaked out. I mean, you don't disrespect the book. And Shams reached in the water, pulled it out bone dry. You idiots. So, I mean, actually, Shams of Tabriz was a Persian. And he was also what's called a peer a leader within certain aspects of what is today understood as the Hindu faith. You know, it was all, you know, all these mystics who could gain direct experience. And it's not scholarly, not intellectual, not theoretical. It's directly perceived, you know? So there's not, when you come to the Sufis and then you have the yogis, they're doing the same things. They're yeah. they're experiencing the same stuff. They discuss it differently in the words that, you know, are natural for their culture and their system. But anyway, that was, Ali yeah. was of well, that
I,
nature.
I apologize.
You know?
I didn't mean to offend any Muslim friends who may be listening. I just thought he was quite a mystic and, you know,
and
up until that enlightened, I didn't realize, you know.
The fact that he'd changed his name particularly
yeah.
from the slave name that he was given.
Yeah, yes, he's
yeah I think that is as profound as him
yeah.
Converting to Islam, isn't it, really? Right.
Yeah.
For anyone unfamiliar, maybe some of the younger listeners might not know that Muhammad Ali was born Cassius Clay in Kentucky to a very poor family. And he reached the highest ranks there are in world recognition and sport and championships and, you know. So
I would boldly say he's the most famous person of certainly the 20th century, for sure.
I would,
you know, I would go along. I would be sticking my neck out saying and say that for sure. Just because I knew him from when I can remember, and I just remember being enthralled by him, you know, being captivated by him, and like, wow. I didn't even know what Bolton was when I was that big.
The things this guy would say, I mean, just awesome, just awesome.
You mentioned interviews there that he did some famous interviews over here on a talk show called Parkins, and he was on that show just like, I think he was the most, you know, person that went on there sort of thing, and he wouldn't hold back. He would tell him. Do you ever remember when him and Brian Clough got together? That's what you did, Nick, do you?
I've probably seen like it on the BBC.
Yeah, probably that was a moment sort of thing, you know. But he was in Manila, you know, for the
Thriller in Manila.
He would say, but he did a satellite link, you know. This is, you know, way before anything sort of thing, and
before Sky.
Brian Clough. Yeah, Brian Clough. For anyone who doesn't know. Took a really small football team and won like the most prestigious competition in Europe twice. So he was kind of, he was similar to Ali in that he was, you know, from a sort of poor background and just didn't take any shit from anyone. And he was a bit of a motor mouth as well. So when the two of them got together, it was quite amusing. Because they were around at the same time, they were calling him the second Ali, and Ali's going, no, there's only one, there's only me.
Right.
Brian Clough, I'll take you outside, and I'll whip you.
the news footage that I saw, some of it today, he was speaking to, you know, black figureheads. Black celebrity people and also not celebrities, and they were all saying how he was the first black person that they saw like speaking on TV.
Oh wow!
And took inspiration from that. So at the time, I mean. You know, you had like a handful of black celebrities, and a few like Ali and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. They were very, very outspoken.
I think though that Ali kind of transcended that black white thing. I think that's why he was so dangerous, because you know, Malcolm X and that, they were very much within the black camp. There might have been a few kind of, you know, more sort of liberal types that might have been listening to them or were interested in what they were saying and weren't afraid of them, sort of thing. But Ali, he, you know, white people loved him. White women loved him. He was a good looking guy, you know, so he really went the whole way, you know. And I think that's why he was quite a danger, and especially when he was moving into the
Vietnam thing, you know.
Yeah, making the political kind of things. And I mean, I think if he hadn't developed, what was it? He got Parkinson's. Then there's a good chance he would have been taken out, or maybe he. If you want to believe that perhaps he was even given Parkinson's to take him out. So, but whatever. He was definitely someone who was before his time, or before the time that they wanted people to become aware of this kind of thing.
Right.
The political things he was talking about, and someone who could transcend those barriers. Because now you have people like Will Smith, don't you? You know. And
Obama.
Yeah, well, Will Smith was a bit of a vehicle for Obama, wasn't he, really? But
Ali was a vehicle for Will Smith, so that sinks up.
Yeah.
Ali could float like a butterfly and sting like a bee in the ring or on the microphone, either one.
Yeah.
Sad loss.
Yeah, big sad loss. Yeah, real bad. Like I was saying at the top of the show, there it's not a good year for 70s celebrities.
No,
really, is it?
He was 74. So yeah, it is that age group, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's all the people who, when I was a kid, who were, you know. Wonder, I mean, if we could start a book on who's going to die next, would it be Donny Osmond?
Oh, I don't know.
He's quite young, though. He's
one of the Osmonds.
Well,
his older brothers, maybe.
70s, though. They were huge, weren't they?
Yeah, but they were quite young in the 70s. I mean...
Yeah. They were children as stars, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, that in light of what the 70s were, have now been established to be this quite dark network of sex abusers. Then these 70s child stars it puts a question of exactly what was going on here. Yeah, I mean, look at Michael Jackson and the Jacksons there. So, in a Mormon, the Mormon, they're quite an insular group of people, aren't they?
And the very reason that they started the whole, you know, bigamy practices and that, one guy having 8 wives, was to do the exact same thing we are now hearing about the Muslims hoping to do within Europe, which is outbreed anyone they see as competition. It is the exact same method that the Mormons did. You know, it's not any different.
What are the Mormons? Are they the Seventh-day Evangelists? Are they Mormons?
Well, there's like, that's a Mormon light kind of thing, you know? Sort of like the Lutherans are a Catholic light, that sort of...
Diet Jesus.
Diet Utah. Wow.
By the way, namaste and blessings, everyone. The Swami welcomes you with great love and great respect from the heart of all. And that's Phi the lovely lady over there, and Steve, hey, cool, the Scotsman, and Sonic, the button pushing monkey.
And we are live on Time On Radio. We got carried away with the Ali thing there, didn't we?
You can find us at type1radio.com. That's type1.com.
Well done.
And we're available in Iowa.
The Berkey commercial comes to mind there, yeah. This Swami has news bongs today. Going to give you a little preview here just to make sure y'all, if y'all already have this on your list, I'll find something else. But just as a promo, the entire European Parliament peed in the cup. We'll tell you what that test revealed. Also, e-music pioneers. What's that?
What was pee in the cup all about?
The European Parliament had their urine tested, and I will share with you what was found that is of note. E-music pioneers, Kraftwerk, if anyone remembers them. They lost a court case.
They did.
And
money, is that right?
Over there in England, there is a mystery of winged tiny human skeletons found in the basement of an old London house. So, those are the Swami's bongs for this week. Hope you guys didn't already have those on your list.
No, they're good ones as well.
Good ones. Really? They sound awesome. We were talking earlier about this sort of spate of like, was a young child had fallen into an enclosure with a gorilla. The zoo promptly shot the gorilla after the gorilla had showed no signs of aggression towards anybody.
Well, with the exception of when the gorilla repositioned himself, he drugged the child through the water, which is kind of scary. When you see that happen, that's a thing that can freak you out a bit. But the gorilla wasn't being aggressive. He was just moving to a position where he could better protect the child, actually.
Yeah, that's the gist of the story I have. And they just went and shot it anyway. And now the zoo going to prosecute the parents of the child for their prized assetted gorilla.
They won't say that again.
The zoo are going to sue the family of the little boy because the gorilla's worth a lot of money.
Oh, their prized asset.
How much are they suing them for?
I don't know. The police are going to prosecute the zoo, and the zoo are going to prosecute the parents. So it's a big old...
Child Protective Services is getting involved too, looking at neglect. But whether they actually come up with such a thing or not is, you know, that's still all in the wind at this moment, but...
And there was an equally other bizarre story we were hearing about this Japanese guy. His child was throwing stones at the neighbor's dog or something. And the father said, right, stop doing that. Hear them all. And the little kids kept doing it. So they fucking dumped him in the middle of a forest that was infested by bears. And
I saw the headline about that. Didn't read the story. Looking forward to some more info on that.
I mean, how did the kid survive for 5 days?
They what?
Days? That's pretty... Well, the kid survived. They left him in the forest for 5 days, sort of thing. And they went back to look for him like a couple of hours later. And he'd buggered off. He'd gone off into the forest on his own, sort of thing. And, yeah, they found him 5 days later. I don't know what sort of state he was in or anything, but...
What a great experience.
Yeah. He probably thought, yeah.
He's probably come out enlightened.
Probably thought, I'm going to fling stones forever.
At least able to make a tent out of sticks and leaves.
Yeah.
he can protect himself from bears as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not sure I could do that.
I'm just amazed to hear a story of a child who wasn't using an iPhone or an iPad or something.
Yeah, I know. He was chucking stones. I was relating last week the story that Rupert Sheldrake took his godson.
Oh, yes.
On a pilgrimage.
Yes.
And I managed to spit out as much as I could remember from that.
Yes, yeah.
But he'd said he'd given up giving people stuff because it's worthless and meaningless, and now he only gives experiences.
Yeah.
And how he took his
there you go.
Whether that be a good or a bad experience is up to the one that goes along with
it. Can you remember was it four things he talked about? He talked about meditation, pilgrimage, and ceremony. Was there another one?
I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember.
So the the down low on this is that he went missing in a bear inhabited forest after his parents apparently abandoned him as punishment, and he was found by chance by military personnel in a hut on one of their exercises 5 kilometres where he was believed to have gone missing. So, yeah, this is fucking...
What state was this in? Do you know?
In Japan.
Hokkaido.
Oh, this happened in Japan. Okay, I thought it was maybe a Japanese guy who did this in the U.S.
No.
Okay, understood.
And so it's like about 2.5 miles, 5 kilometers distance from where he was dropped off to where he was found, and heavily wooded area. Mm. The doctors said that he was remarkably well, just a few scratches. Mm-hmm. So now the parents had originally told the police their son had got lost whilst they were out hiking to gather wild vegetables, but later they said they were angry and tried to punish him for throwing stones. After being united with Yamato, Father Takeyuka told reporters outside the hospital, "The first thing I did was to apologise to him for causing him such an awful memory." Yeah. And now, probably a worse memory, because his parents...
The whole world knows.
His parents are going to be going to jail, aren't they, for that, surely?
Well, and if not, still the loss of face in Japanese culture for having done this to your child. You know, that wasn't their intent. They wanted to let him sit out there and chill a while, then went back to get him, but, he went for a stroll, went on walkabout.
According to a soldier who was familiar with the building, there wasn't any wasn't there when they found him. The boy was curled up on a mattress and not visible injuries. The soldier gave him rice balls and bread after he said he was really hungry and thirsty. Oh, bless him.
I imagine. 3 days without water and your body starts going into a dreadful state.
Yeah. It was heavy rainfall at the time as well, but at least it wasn't like freezing. And lucky for the kid that he'd found this shelter.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't help thinking that he's quite resourceful. That little kid.
Yeah, that little kid is pretty.
Yeah.
God damn, better than me. Yeah. How would be?
Yeah.
How good I'd be.
You'd been bear food.
Yeah, I'd have probably done all the wrong things to attract the bears in the first place. And but you're not supposed to scratch yourself around, are you? Because the follicles can smell them like miles away.
Oh,
I think that's an idiot.
Well, surely having a pee or a number two might attract them as well.
Yes, there's a joke in there somewhere.
It'd be much more dangerous having a Big Mac in your pocket.
or a jar of honey. So well done, that little Jap kid.
Survival. Maybe he was a Boy Scout. a Japanese version of a Boy Scout, and or if he isn't, he should like set up a. His
I was going to say if he ain't got to be.
He's one, yeah.
Yeah, survival school.
Survive your parents in the abandoning in the forest scout
good school.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, yeah. What were his parents thinking? Even just to like, even if they thought that they would leave him there for an hour or so,
yeah,
and then go back just to scare him. Fucking just like bad parenting. They'd gone to the McCann's school of parenting.
I can't just think that.
Yeah.
Oh, we shouldn't laugh really, but that's funny.
Well, yeah, at least he's alive. Well done, that little lad.
Yeah, he'll probably grow up to be
well,
the next Dalai Lama.
The forces that regulate the universe were looking out for him, even though his parents weren't. So.
Yeah.
Because it most certainly could have ended far differently.
Sure. Isn't it funny though that a kid sort of goes into the forest with wild animals and survives? Yeah, a kid who falls into a cage ends up getting a wild animal killed. Quite a weird sort of synergy going on with them two stories, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like. It's like
well, that's happened before. I think it was in UK where a mother gorilla picked up and carried around a kid that had fallen into the enclosure.
Yeah, I've seen those stories.
With her own baby on her back. And she, you know, I mean, they're not out to eat us. That's, you know, they're not out to tear our heads off like a crush it like a coca, any of that nonsense. These are primates. They're not that far from us. They don't get what we're about, and many of us don't get what they're about. But we're not inherently a threat, you know?
And particularly a small human.
Yeah, they would know the difference.
Yeah, he stood the kid up and was touching him, you know, which in gorilla culture, you know, they give these what can be referred to as comforting touches, you know, the parents do to the young ones and stuff. And he was doing exactly that. He stood him up and he was positioned in a guard position, not an attack position. He was back
he
there in the corner.
No.
He was back there in the corner. You know, where the kid fell in at, and his butt was in the corner, and he's looking up at all these people screaming and hollering, which, you know, he's used to people being up there, but not acting like that. So he repositioned over into an area where he had some room to move and was further away from the noisy humans. But when he dragged the kid along, you know, he didn't pick him up and cuddle him, he just kind of dragged him by the arm or the leg, and the water flew, and you know, it was very scary looking, but that's when he helped the kid up to stand up, and you know, he saw that this thing, whatever it is okay, and then notices the people up top freaking out even more because he drug him through the water, and so he grabs him again and moves to another area where he's kind of out of view. And, you know, in animal psychology, many times, just like our cats and dogs and things, they kind of figure, if I can't see you, you can't see me. You know? So the threat is no longer serious to the child or the gorilla. I mean, that was pure group leader behavior that this Swami observed. So it's just a sad thing all the way.
Were there other gorillas in that enclosure, or was he the only one?
No, there were others, but I think only one or two were out in that part at the time this occurred.
That happened, yeah.
But none of the other of the, you know, the gorilla clan were up close or any of that.
Yeah.
We've got another Fairport Conventions. Dave Swarbrick dies at 75. Yeah.
Oh, Swarf. Oh, no, the fiddle player.
Yeah.
We've seen him a couple of times.
We have. Mm. To be fair, any of them look like they
could
go at any moment, don't they?
He's damn lucky to be made of this part, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the Swarf's dead. Oh, that'll be. There'll be much sadness at Cropperty this year.
There will. That'll be coming up in a few weeks.
Cropperty is Fairport Convention's
annual festival,
which they headline, and they have other acts playing. We saw Lula there once, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
Jules Holland and Supergrass.
wasn't who's the other woman
the
there?
Levelers.
No, there was Lulu and
Jules Holland.
Have you ever seen Gaza around town?
Was it?
No, it was Ruby Turner.
Yeah, that's it. Because Shirley Bassey was at Glastonbury, wasn't she?
Yeah. You know, I saw her on the telly.
Yeah.
Person.
Right.
Oh, so Dave.
Right, he's died.
Yeah, that's a shame. So he was the same age as Ali, was he?
Well, no, Ali was 74, he was 75. But I think, look, just seen a picture of that guy, and, you know, maybe the last picture that we've seen of Ali, Ali looked a lot better than even
not really
having Parkinson's.
Well, he was an athlete, not a musician. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Taking care of the physical temple is a little more important for the athlete than the musician.
Yeah, the other guy looked like he'd eaten a lot of pies.
By the way, congratulations on your incarnation day, Steve. You're now a whole year older than I am until November.
Yes. Yeah, I spent it all on my own. No, I didn't speak to a single soul on my birthday.
You spoke to me.
Not in person.
Well, we weren't face to face, but we did.
No. You conversed.
We did.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So you had a little retreat on your birthday.
I had a sort of little. I was going to...
You had some you time, didn't you, Steve?
Yeah, I had a lot of you time, me time. And it was good. Well, I spoke to, obviously, my parents. I weirdly got a call from my sister, who I never speak to.
Apart from when she phones you?
Apart from when she phones me, or when I phone her, sort of thing.
Is this interesting radio? Not really.
Not really, no.
So have we got another news bomb? why don't we move along with the music stories and perhaps if Bernie's listening,
we've got
he'll be interested in this one.
We've got bong. Here's the bong.
Bong. Has it been bonged?
It's been bonged.
Headline: E-music, electrical music pioneers Kraftwerk lose copyright case. Germany's highest court Tuesday struck down a challenge by electronic music pioneers Kraftwerk, that's spelled with a K at the beginning and an E in work, against a hip-hop artist's two-second sample of their tune in a dispute that erupted almost 20 years ago. The landmark ruling by the Constitutional Court acknowledges the essential place that the practice of sampling has in the hip-hop genre and gives artists greater freedom to use small segments from previously recorded tunes. If the impact on the usage rights of the intellectual property owner is, quote, negligible, then artistic freedom overrides the interest of the owner of the copyright, end quote, said the court. At the heart of the dispute is a short drum sequence looped repeatedly in the song Nur Mir, Only Me, by rap artist Sabrina Settler, also famous for her past relationship with German former tennis star Boris Becker. The sequence originally came from Kraftwerk's 1977 release, Metal auf Metal, which means metal on metal. Since the release of Nur Mir in 97, Kraftwerk's lead singer, Ralph Hütter, has been battling over the rights of the sequence against the producer, Moses Pelham. The electronic music veterans had already won German court backing for damages and an injunction over the song, but Pelham and Settler appealed and brought the case to the country's top court, claiming it infringed artistic freedom. At the courthouse hearing in Karlsruhe in November, Hütter insisted that the commandment, "Thou shalt not steal," applied also to music. Founded by Hütter and Florian Schneider in the Western German city of Düsseldorf in 1970, Kraftwerk spearheaded synthesizer music and went on to have a profound influence on the likes of David Bowie, Joy Division, and Depeche Mode. This Swami can add a personal experience to that. Very, very first time this Swami ever saw a set of lights that were hooked up to speakers, therefore flashing with the beat of the music, was to the song by Kraftwerk that went pon 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 on the Autobahn. And so that was like, ooh, that was cool back in the day. We didn't have cable yet, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird they've been told they've lost that case, because there's been...
Why is it weird?
Well, because... Well, there's been other samples of Kraftwerk music used, and they haven't bothered with them, but they specifically went for this woman, so I think.
And
that's the weird thing.
They've ended up losing it, yeah.
Also, because recently, I mean, it might be a thing with German as opposed to American law, that the Beastie Boys have recently successfully sued somebody for using a sample from Paul's Boutique.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the album they made themselves, though, isn't it? That's the album they actually wrote and played, as opposed to sample.
Yeah, no. So somebody else sampled bits of Paul's Boutique. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is that's the first album they made without sampling. It's the first one they actually, because they used to be a punk band, the Beastie Boys.
It was the album before they got really big.
Yeah, it was the third album. It was the album after the sort of novelty of License to Ill.
No, it was after. It was before License to Ill.
No, it was after.
Was it? Oh.
Yeah, it was definitely after. It was definitely because they were originally a punk band, like back in the day. They were sort of on the tail. They played CBGBs and all that sort of thing. And then they were absolutely shit. And then when rap happened, they done a couple of rap things, and they got that notoriety with the fight for your right to party and all that. And after they sort of had that success, and the second album didn't really hit that big, they then recorded Paul's Boutique, which was like they played all the instruments on it, but then sampled it. So that's what I'm saying. It's weird that they that's the album that they're suing over, because they actually do own the. They did actually write it themselves and play it themselves. But I was did you see the festival in Germany, where all the people got injured by lightning?
Yeah, 42 people.
Fuck fucking. Well, there's 70, more than 70 people have been injured by lightning strikes at a music festival in Germany. There are calls for the Rock AM Ring Festival, which takes place in Mendig, around 93 miles from Frankfurt, to be shut down because more thunderstorms are forecast. Festival organisers said on Sunday morning that 42 people had been injured, 8 seriously, and the numbers rose to 71 as more fans came forward with injuries. German news website Deutsche Welle reports that 45,000 music fans had gathered for the event, which was interrupted by extreme weather for at least half an hour on Friday. I mean, fucking hell, that must have been horrible, eh? So it doesn't actually say what...
I think that's Deutsche Welle as well, not Douche. Sorry.
Deutsche Welle. but what happened? Did the light rig get hit and the things explode or what? Any further...
It happened last year as well, apparently.
Yeah, 33 people got struck by lightning last year. So I think 42 people got hit by the lightning today, and 70 were injured.
Well, it made me wonder actually a little bit.
Isn't that the Love Fest you're talking about?
No, it's this thing. If there's something going on with all the sort of technology that they use to set this festival up. And if it's in an area around this time of year where there's likely to be kind of the air's warming up a bit and there's likely to be thunderstorms and you're going to get a static field,
yes.
If it's kind of enriching the static field,
drawing it towards it.
As we know this can do, and kind of enhancing it and making the thunderstorms or the lightning strikes more rapid or apparent greater.
It's a Europe-wide thing that's happened in the last couple of days, though, because in France and Paris they've had to move all the artworks upstairs in the Louvre.
Yeah.
Because the Louvre is insane. Uh-huh. Do you get it? No, the banks of the River Seine are flooded. It's went to like a 35-year high or something like that, and it's just been like absolutely, you know, Paris is flooded basically. And also Romania and parts of Romania and Belgium are also experiencing this like mad sort of
Holland will be all right.
they are anyway, something. But water levels have begun to decrease now to normal levels in France, which is quite good for the Parisians, I guess. But I don't know if they haven't cancelled that festival yet, which features the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Black Sabbath. So.
I've stayed at places in Paris, actually, where you could say the Louvre's flooded.
We've had this week in Texas badass rain, too, that killed some military guys that got swept away in a truck. Down at Fort Hood, Texas.
Oh, I saw that. I saw a report saying that they'd found the bodies.
Yeah. Mm. This flooding thing is, it's you can't ignore it once that water starts getting up to your neck.
And it's summer flooding as well. That's the weird thing. Because you would have thought Texas would be quite dry in the summer. Or is that just is that a particularly wet part of Texas?
No, generally it would be considerably drier and hotter, but because of the way the weather patterns have changed and the jet stream has repositioned, and you know, so everybody's getting these climate changes that, you know, are just part of the system and bringing things into areas that had never experienced them before, you know.
So, right, if we take that all the radio towers, all the cell phone towers and the Wi-Fi everywhere has an effect on the atmosphere, then do you think that the climate, the like Agenda 21 climate change agenda is sort of paralleling the so the creating the effect that they want with or the effect that they want is like a side product of technology which the which has been developed and this is you know, maybe not detrimentally, but it's changing weather patterns that to make it unusual to the people that are alive at the moment. You know, because I mean, you know, as we've spoken before, you know, they were reporting earlier in the year, like January was freakishly stormy, but then fire had looked back through the years and it had been the same. But it was just reported differently. So do you think that this is the agenda of the climate is they know that they've got a way to affect weather that they can promote the climate change.
Right. Well, and there's also, you know, the natural, whatever the natural course of things, they can use these electronic and frequency means to kind of goose them a little bit in a way that will pay off for them, you know?
Yeah. What were you going to say, Vi?
I think undoubtedly that's what's happening. I think that's been happening for quite a few years.
So, and do you think that the purposefully they've utilised the effects that they've found with cell towers and radio frequencies in general, and that the effects on the, you know, crops or the climate, bees, and have skewered the reporting to make it that I suppose in a way that they are blatantly saying that it's man-made, but what they're forgetting to tell is that they're making it.
It's not CO2 man-made. High technology man-made.
Right. There you go.
The projection,
which they just try to get in front of any of the natural trends that they can see occurring, and then that seems to make sense to everybody. You know, if they just get half a step ahead of a storm moving through and intensify it in an area that will damage crop production and such, well, then if they bet against the crop price, well, now they make money.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's a huge casino operation. They're doing it. They're rigging it like a carny does a carnival game. You know, it's very much in that metaphor. You know.
So, yeah. I mean, that is really sneaky, that the projecting that they're fiddling, they're messing around with stuff onto the general public and making the general public feel responsible. Yeah.
Believe it's their fault.
Yeah.
Right. It's your SUV that's the problem. You need to buy a Prius, you know.
But definitely get the next smartphone.
Yes, all right.
That's actually funnily enough, just what you've been saying over the past couple of moments, there's an update from the Paris floods that I mentioned. You know, how they're saying, you know, this is from our good friends, not a lot of people know that website, that, you know, the sort of scare story and the saying is reaching to sort of disastrous levels. But funnily enough, this fella's found out that in 1910, the levels were worse, much more worse. The projected sort of height to what it's going to be in 2016 is about 6.18 meters. Is that? Or
that's quite high.
6.3 meters. It's quite high. Yeah, there's a statue of some dude in the middle of the Seine over this bridge sort of thing. But in 1955, it was at 7.12, and in 1910, it was at 8.62. So, like, I mean, look, there's a picture from 1910 where it's you can hardly see the top of the statue's head that's come off. So it's just, they're just trying to freak you out.
Well, you know, our mainstream media weather people and those reporting on these stories are not actually doing as, you know, others of us will do to look at this stuff. They're not doing journalism. They're just reading the report in whatever way it's been handed to them, you know, to promote whatever agenda is on the table. It's not about the actual history and situations. It's about promote the agenda, and that's it.
But it's also like sloppy journalism, and it's soundbite news
and sensationalism
for the YouTube generation.
Right, right. The majority of the population is only getting headlines at best.
Yeah. There was another thing that, on the John, can't remember his last name. He's an English guy, he does an American talk show, but he goes through the news, and he was doing this thing on on American news quite a lot. They have like bits where they go, in this report, chocolates, it says that chocolate's really good in pregnancy. And there was various like outlandish statements and he looked into the studies, and they were just like, you know, completely bollocks. but the way it was reported, you know, like on, you know, sort of morning news, a glass of red wine is good for it. You know, you hear these stories all the time, but the research is just, it doesn't say anything about these things. It's just, you know.
Well, that's why, you know, when you see the different, if you take a view of some of the various mainstream news outlets, you'll find that they're all, whatever the story of the day, the story of the last few days in a cycle of news, they're using the same talking points. You know, very much of it is quoting, and they're all saying the same thing, but they're coming at it from their particular angle, you know, with Fox News doing the right-wing thing and CNN doing the left-wing thing and, you know, the various network media in the U.S. doing their, you know, it's just, it's perception management, and that's all it is. It's all it's been for quite some time.
Yeah. Just hopefully,
well,
people.
Folks, we're coming up on the hour mark, so we're going to play us a little tune, and then if you, for our two good friends who are listening live, if you want to refresh your player after we hear from Pixies and our tribute to Muhammad Ali. This is called Javelina.